This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. As I'm sure you're aware, there have been multiple 2016 October surprises, the latest being the FBI renewing its Hillary Clinton email investigation. The FBI has obtained a search warrant to go through emails connected to the probe into Clinton's use of a private email server. On Monday, Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio joined Tony to discuss it. Representative Jordan serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Here now is that interview.
Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you today, Tony.
Is it possible, Jim, that we may actually be getting down to the issue of discovering and bringing forth the facts regarding Hillary Clinton and her treatment of classified information?
Yeah, who knows? What we do is that the when the FBI came forward, there must be something there. Why else would the director come forward and say we're going to reexamine this and reopen this investigation? After all he's been through, after all the abuse for what I think is a poorly managed case, where you had all kinds of unusual things take place in this case, after going through all that, now to come forward, after telling us he wasn't going to reopen the case when we brought things in front of him in some of his committee hearings recently, it must be something pretty darn important. That's at least what I believe is the case.
Now, what we're seeing is that there, we're told there's 650,000 emails that could be at question here that was on this private computer that was shared by Huma and Anthony Weiner. What possibly could be in this email? A lot of emails, but what could be there that they haven't seen yet?
Well, remember on the front of a year ago, I asked Secretary Clinton when she was in front of the Benghazi committee, I asked her, why don't you agree to allow a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, come in and examine all the emails so he can decide which ones are personal, which ones are not. And instead of you deciding on the front end, you and your legal team, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, her legal team, saying we're going to keep these, and then they destroyed those, and then we're only going to give us part of them, why not let a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, do that? She wouldn't agree to that. She wanted to control it from the front end. So she kept 30-some thousand emails and then destroyed those. She said they were yoga, they were wedding plans, and they were personal issues. She wouldn't agree to something to let a federal judge do it. She decided on the front end, what if, now I'm just speculating, but what if those 30,000 are now on this source, this computer, this system? So it could be something like that. It could be something that goes to the, remember Mr. Comey talked about intent. He said he didn't think the intent element, which I thought was there on the classified issue, he didn't think it was met. Maybe there's some emails here that point to intent and cause him to reexamine that issue. The simple truth is we don't know, but both campaigns, and I think the American people would like, the full information out there as quickly as possible. And so let's hope that's what the FBI does.
So do you anticipate that the FBI is going to come forward with information prior to the election?
I don't know, but based on what Comey has done thus far with his big press conference back in July announcing all the wrong that Secretary Clinton had done, but yet he wasn't going to prosecute, all we have learned since then, the fact that Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton 3 days before the subject of the investigation was interviewed by the FBI, something we've never seen, the fact that five people got immunity, five of them got immunity, no one gets prosecuted, three of the five who got immunity took the fifth in front of Congress, all these things, unusual things, and this whole pattern, and then to come out last week and say, oh I'm going to reexamine the case, I would hope he would come out sometime before the election and tell us what's there. I think the American people deserve that, and again, both campaigns called for that, but we don't know. The truth is, all we know is they're re-looking at this, so it must be something pretty darn important.
True. I think no one questions the fact that there's probably something very significant here for them to reopen this case when the dust had begun to settle on it. But bear in mind, Congressman Jordan, this is still the Obama administration Department of Justice, which doesn't give me great confidence, given their track record.
Right. No, I agree. Lois Lerner was not prosecuted. John Koskinen, they defend him. The investigation I thought they did in the IRS was not appropriate. This investigation, the things I just rattled off. Here's the other thing. When have you ever seen the Attorney General announce ahead of time, I'll follow the recommendations of the FBI, even though they haven't given them yet? In fact, I asked her that question under oath. I said, you know, Attorney General, have you ever done that before? She said, no, this is the first and only time. So this whole case was handled different, underscoring what I think is at stake in this election. You know, if Hillary Clinton's the next president, we're going to continue to have a double standard. One standard for you and me, Tony, and a different one for the politically connected, like John Koskin and Hillary Clinton. If Donald Trump's elected president, I think we're going to get back to a Justice Department focused on justice and not on politics. And that is fundamental. You know, this equal treatment under the law is the way it's supposed to work in our great country. And that is not what we've seen from this Justice Department. So that's one of the huge issues, I think, at stake in this upcoming election.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. We're broadcasting live from Wilson, North Carolina, as the Values Bus is hitting all 100 counties here in the all-important swing state of North Carolina. I'm discussing with Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio Friday's announcement by FBI Director James Comey that they were reopening the investigation to Hillary Clinton and her handling of classified material in her private servers, et cetera, et cetera. Congressman, when you just laid out what we could expect if Hillary Clinton were elected president, if in fact James Comey has discovered something here in this unrelated investigation into Anthony Weiner and his sexting problems, the probability of justice being done if Hillary Clinton is elected president is, in my view, slim to none. I mean, this thing goes away immediately, I would think.
Well, the truth is we don't know. What I think is of most importance, Tony, and I know you understand this, is, and so your listeners, is the next 8 days and what happens on Tuesday, November 8th. We're going to elect the next commander-in-chief. We're going to elect the next president of the United States. I've said all along my work on the Benghazi committee that I think Libya alone should disqualify Secretary Clinton from being commander-in-chief. I mean, the fact that she misled the American people about the motive, about the cause of that attack, she knew privately and said privately it was a terrorist attack, but publicly tried to blame it on the video. And worse yet, she told that same story to Tyrone Woods' father and Sean Smith's mother. And it seems to me anyone who will not be square with parents whose kids gave their life for our country should not be the president. So I think the real question is, I hope the FBI brings as much information forward as they can so the American people can know as much as they can going into this election. And I hope Donald Trump wins for a number of reasons. But certainly it's the fact that I don't think Secretary Clinton was straightforward with the American people and the Benghazi issue. What we found out just in the last few weeks, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she says that we should have a borderless hemisphere.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that defines you as a country is you have boundaries.
Now, well, she refused to answer that question at the last debate, saying, well, that came from hacked emails with, and she said, I was talking about energy. And so she completely maneuvered Chris Wallace on that question and didn't answer it. This issue, though, with this reopening of this investigation, I mean, everybody sees this as very, very significant with, you know, less than 2 weeks left in the election. I know Washington is a very polarized, partisan city, but have you heard anything from your Democratic colleagues that they, too, now are beginning to question the validity of her candidacy given this information?
No, I have not. I mean, all I've seen in the press is the other party defending her. When you look at the whole pattern that she set this thing up, to hide information, that's, I think, the whole motivation of why she had this separate server situation put together. It was to hide information. They got caught. When they got caught, they said, we're not going to let some neutral third party look at it. We're going to do it ourselves. And we'll decide, her and her legal team decided on the front end which ones they kept, which ones we got. The ones they kept, they destroyed, except maybe now, maybe they're part of the ones that were just found, and that's why they reopened it. But they decided on the front end. And then all along, she's told us things that turned out not to be true. Several things. She said them to us, and she said some of them under oath when she testified a year ago. So I think when you put all that together, this is, again, why the American people need as much information. I think the American people are sharp. I think they're going to decide to vote for Donald Trump. He's going to be our next president.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan, we're going to have to leave it there. We're up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon. Go out and do some trick-or-treating, okay?
All right. Thanks, Tony. Take care.
You can find out more about Congressman Jim Jordan when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, a look at the latest trends in polling. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
What can parents do to prevent the transgender movement from spreading to their children's schools? FRC has created a parent's guide to the transgender movement in education to help. This concise brochure can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll get valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, churchgoers, and more. Again, the number is 800-225-4008. Thank you for standing strong for the family.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Swing states, also known as battleground states, play a huge role in national elections. These are states that don't always show loyalty for one particular political party. On Monday, Tony was joined by a man who knows a lot about the importance of battleground states, Jeff Rowe. He's the principal and founder of Axiom Strategies, a research and campaign consulting firm.
Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right, Jeff, tell me, what happened as a result of Friday's announcement? Has it moved voters at all in these important battleground states?
It has. What we've seen, and with typical October surprises, it takes a little bit to bake into the electorate's psyche. We see this all the time. It fully won't be felt until probably 4 or 5 days after the weekend that it happens. But we already see some movement. And to be clear, I don't believe anyone today is choosing between, or very few are choosing between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. What the real decision is are undecided voters, how are they going to vote, and are they going to vote?
Right.
And then second is the third party, Gary Johnson, the support that he's gotten, which has really been outsized for a typical third party candidate. We know, all the way going back to the convention in the summer and even into the fall, he was in double digits. That number is now down. I think over the course of this week, we can see that number continue to erode. And as we know from polling, he is getting the dominant share of his votes come from Trump. And so that's where we see the movement. We've seen in Florida just from Sunday to Sunday, we've seen a 4-point increase in Florida. We've seen 1 point really all across the board, with the exception of North Carolina, and that's within the margin of error where Trump is leading by 2. He was leading by 3. But you take a look at an important state, and I think it's critical on this, what is the path to victory. The Trump team needs to put another state in play. If you take that they were going to win Florida and Nevada, where they're doing well, and Ohio, where they've been up for quite some time, Iowa, some of these states are traditional battleground states, that's enough to get them to 266. But then they've got to pick one up. They've got to pick up a Pennsylvania or a Wisconsin or a maybe even a Virginia, or what we've been looking at lately is Colorado. And there we see Colorado has a Clinton, was up 2, and now she's up 1. And that's a state that I don't think at the beginning that anybody would have predicted to be so close. And then you see Wisconsin, which was a 5-point margin state for Clinton, is now 4 points, so back into the margin of error. So we see movement really across the board, and you see it in national polls as well. But the national poll, as we know, when George W. Bush had his drinking and driving brought up at the very end, it didn't really do much nationally. It was about a point and a half that you saw the polls move.
Mm-hmm.
But importantly, he lost 5 or 6 points with his base in Florida, which thrust us into a hanging Chad election. And so that's really where to watch it, and that's why we went back in the field to take a look and see how the dynamics of these battleground states are performing with the new news.
Well, Jeff Rowe, I talked about this Friday. I was actually on with Lou Dobbs, and I think it's to what your earlier point was at the very beginning. It's the undecideds. I see that Hillary Clinton supporters are not going to be moved by this because they've been supporting a corrupt regime for 8 years, so I don't see why they would be moved off of her. I do think, in addition to the independents, though, a segment of voting, a very important voting segment that you're familiar with. A number of these social conservative evangelicals that have been sitting on the sidelines or agitating against Trump, they now are, I think they're in a dilemma because they're now confronted with squarely confronted with the reality that this agitation could facilitate the election of the queen of corruption if they vote for third party or stay out of the election. Do you see any movement in that category?
We do, and I think you're exactly right, and it's profound in the fact that this has been posed as a binary choice, and a lot of people want to throw up different kind of red herrings that it wasn't, and that you could actually, you know, not make that choice and not have your hands clean from the election. But as we know now, this is becoming a very behavioral, typical election cycle from the Democrat standpoint. It's not the Obama aggressive turnout operation that we've seen in his election and re-election. It is really kind of a base Democrat vote. And as this gets down to the wire, we're staring at what is going to be 4 years of this type of back and forth with FBI and law enforcement agencies looking at her. And so therefore, I think we've seen some consolidation. To put it in a numerical standpoint, Mr. Trump has moved from 72% of Republican support to 84% just in the last 10 days. And that has helped people up and down the ballot, particularly in these swing state senators that are up for re-election or open seats like in Nevada, where the base coming home to Trump has a measurable impact on control of the Senate as well. So the rising tide floats all boats analogy comes into play.
So,
and if he gets to 90%, he's going to win.
So, Jeff, we're at 10 seconds before we go to a break, but you're saying that Anthony Weiner's email and his sexting scandal could very well be what secures the Senate for the Republicans.
That's absolutely correct.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Jeff Rowe, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Very informative and insightful. We'll be touching base with you probably in the days ahead. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for everything you do.
To find out more about the importance of voting and the platforms of the two major parties, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, is the Obama administration trying to hurt our relationship with Israel before he leaves office? We'll have that answer when we return for more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
How important is a party platform? Very important, as it turns out. Why? In the past 30 years, Republicans in Congress voted for positions supported by their party platform 89% of the time, while Democrats did so at a rate of 74%. People of faith can be confident that Republicans will defend life, marriage, and religious liberty, while Democrats will devalue them. For a concise two-page platform comparison, visit www.frcaction.org/2016.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. One of America's greatest allies is Israel. President Obama has done much to damage the friendship between our two nations, but Representative Trent Franks has been one of the most outspoken voices on behalf of Israel in the United States Congress. A recent Wall Street Journal article indicates that the administration may try to do more damage before the president leaves office. Here's Tony Perkins with Representative Trent Franks.
Congressman Trent Franks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tony. I always love being with you, sir.
And by the way, it was great to see you this weekend when I was out in Phoenix. You were there at the Choices Pregnancy Center's dinner, and it was so good to see you and always appreciate all that you've done on behalf of protecting the sanctity of human life.
Well, sometimes I just wonder if the listeners know how much trouble that Tony Perkins goes to help these kinds of efforts across the country. Tony, you did a magnificent job.
Well, I appreciate that. It was great to see you and your wife and your kids there and get a chance to meet your brother as well. So a great family. And in addition to your passion for life, you have been one of the voices outspoken on behalf of Israel in the United States Congress. And this Wall Street Journal report, troubling that the Obama White House on the way out may muddle relations between Israel and the United States even further before he leaves office.
Yeah. Well, I think that this president has secretly harbored ill will toward Israel, and that the commitment to the American people to Israel has been about the only thing that has politically restrained him. And so I have great concern that in the lame duck he may do something. It ranges all the way from the possibility of having a resolution recognizing the Palestinian state or do something to call for Israel to completely stop all settlements of any kind in their own territory. You know, it's always amazing to me, Tony, that the President of the United States now has actually voiced more criticism for Israel building homes in their own country, in their own cities,
right,
than he has for Iran building nuclear weapons with which to threaten the entire peace and security of the world.
Including Israel.
This is Israel's greatest and most dangerous enemy is Iran, and Iran leaders have said that they would like to recreate the Holocaust. And of course, they say it didn't happen, and now they want to make it happen again. So that's the mindset that they have to deal with. And of course, the other thing, I mean, there are a lot of possibilities, but the other thing that they might do is just to lay out an imposed solution on the whole negotiation between the Palestinian and the Israel authorities. And you can imagine that the terms of that would be very unfavorable to Israel. Barack Obama has been the most anti-Israel president that we've had in my lifetime. And I think that Mrs. Clinton will only carry on that attitude. And, you know, you mentioned my children. And, Tony, I truly believe that your children and mine will walk in a very different place in the world if Israel is not strong and secure. So it's not just a matter of being supportive of Israel, which we both are. It's a matter of caring about our own children and the light of freedom that they will walk in or not, potentially based on how we treat Israel and based on what happens on that front line between civilization and jihad, which Israel occupies. It occupies that front line.
I agree 100%. I think when Israel is safe and strong, America is safe and strong. There is a direct correlation between the two.
I could not possibly agree with you more.
What might the president be able to do by executive order where he could just unilaterally do something that if you had, for instance, Hillary Clinton coming in, she wouldn't have to take the heat for it and not undo, but she wouldn't undo it, and whatever he does on his way out stands?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, he has essentially the influence on whether or not to veto almost any conceivable resolution that the UN could pass. And so he could clear the way for her and just allow it to pass, and then she would have an easy transition. But the bottom line is that he knows that Israel is in trouble either in his administration or in a Clinton administration. So he may just decide to try to make it easier for her and, as you say, take the heat. The indications are that he's already asked his staff to come up with a list of options, and none of them essentially would be good for Israel. And just consider just the whole notion of letting the UN essentially do what they want to do. You know, consider the bias against Israel there. The UNESCO recently passed a resolution, and I think the vote was like 10-2. There were some abstentions, but they called the Temple Mount by its Arab name only and
right,
cited it as a historical, cultural, and religious site significant to Muslims only. I mean, there was no mention of Judaism or Christianity. Christianity has existed about 600 years longer than Islam, and Judaism has existed thousands of years longer. And, of course, they had the primary, Solomon's Temple was built there. And I remember I was in Israel not so long ago, and we were told, now we ignored it, but we were told not to mention any indication that Solomon's Temple was ever there. So the gross, arrogant distortion and outright obliteration of history here is something that the Obama administration is complicit with, and it is it's a disgrace, and I think it endangers America in the long run and our own children.
And what's extremely troubling about this to me, Congressman Franks, is that despite the initiatives, anti-Israel initiatives of this administration, or at least indifference at best toward Israel, that Israel has actually enjoyed pretty good relationships with their Sunni Arab neighbors like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates because of the common threat that Iran poses to them. And so they've been working together, and there's actually a nucleus of peace that is coming together in that region of the world in spite of what this administration has done.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, anytime you have Israel and Saudi Arabia working together this closely because they understand how dangerous to both of them a nuclear Iran is, you understand the dynamics have changed there. And of course, I don't even know how to articulate the things that Barack Obama has done to help Iran stay on a trajectory to gain nuclear weapons capability. I think that they have a better chance of gaining a nuclear weapons capability with the Iran deal than they ever had without it. Mm-hmm. So not only did it not preclude it, like some of the distorted pundits say, but it absolutely made it more possible and plausible for Iran to gain nuclear weapons. And I really, not to sound trite here, but Tony, I think if Iran gains nuclear weapons, just out of decency and protocol, they ought to name their first warhead Barack Obama, because it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable what this man has done to empower not only Israel's greatest enemy, but the most prolific sponsor of terrorism on this planet. And it is very possible, because Barack Obama once walked the halls of the White House, that my children and your children will walk in the shadows of nuclear terrorism.
Well, I can't add anything to that, because I believe you're absolutely right. And not only did we facilitate the acceleration of them getting nuclear weapons, but we're also giving them a lot of cash along the way to do some other devious acts. Congressman Trent Franks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.